going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a double dose of your WTF Prime Time! This is Evangelus coming to you with the first recording from the apartment I'm staying at in Toronto for the next month. It's a nice little basement number full of centipedes who I'm slowly bending to my thrall. It's also a special occasion today because not only is Hasbro Toy Shop being demolished by giant crowds beating down their walls for San Diego Comic-Con 2011 exclusive toys, but today is also the grand YouTube battle between Fabio and the Old Spice guy. So there's a lot happening today. And joining me to take part in all of this is Gog Dog.
Oh, I'm not taking part in all of it, just the Prime stuff. But The other stuff sounds really interesting. I wish I could be a part of it.
Well, you know, we can fit you in somewhere, I'm sure. It's a multifaceted day. Also here with me today is Aaron.
Yes, I am twice excited because we're starting early.
Yeah, because I'm in this time zone now.
Yeah, since you're in the correct time zone now, we don't have to wait until...
Correct.
Crazy late to get started to go even later.
No, all that's happened is I've been trapped in this demented time zone. And, you know, that's all I got to say about that. Also here today with us is Omegas.
I am here. Unfortunately, I was trying to watch episodes of Transformers Prime, but every time I hit play, an episode of My Little Pony came up.
That's all right. They had that error on Hasbro Toy Shop. They fixed it by having you refresh about 50 times and then waiting for about 20 people to just get disgruntled and leave. I love it when everyone ends up having to go through the Maddie Collector grind at some point. You can't escape it. It's always there, always waiting. But we're going to be talking about two episodes of Prime because I didn't have any time to record one of these for Rock Bottom last week. So we're going to be covering Rock Bottom and Partners. And I will just say up front, I haven't actually watched Rock Bottom since last week, and I just watched Partners last night, so I'm a little bit fresher on one of those two episodes. I'll leave it up to you to guess which one. But let's start off talking a little bit more about Rock Bottom, since it did come first. And what I recall being the big part of that episode for me that I really enjoyed was Megatron, specifically Frank Welker's delivery on Megatron, because he finally got to do even more stuff with him. And he had that specifically the awesome moment with him with Megatron and Jack, which I really liked, and also Megatron almost having this revisitationing of the G1 relationship between himself and Starscream, only outright stating some of the, I guess you could say, plot holes of that relationship. Like, why does Megatron always keep Starscream around in Transformers Prime? Because it amused him to do so. But the amusement had ended, and he had a plan for Starscream. So I really enjoyed Megatron in Rock Bottom. Gog, how'd you feel about Megatron?
I liked him. I like how the entire reason why he was with Starscream was to basically make him think that he was just coming out on a random errand, didn't really explain to him what was going on, kept putting him on the spot for... things that apparently Starscream has had in the works. Like, he didn't necessarily mine all of the raw energon in an area, so he could, in case he ever needed it in the future, have his own little private reserve. Megatron basically comes out, he's like, I wonder what this is. Why would this be, Starscream? And catches him in about several different lies, and then eventually he's like, yeah, I know. I know about everything. I also know that you're sitting here lying to me. And I'm getting a bit of a kick out of it because I can see through everything that you're doing. it was kind of sadistic, I'd say. I guess we'll get into the drilling part later because that's the only that's the one that I'd really like to discuss. But I'm sure that moment kind of deserves its own topic. But I'd say overall. Megatron was really good in this, for sure.
Yeah, I was just so happy that he was getting so much screen time and so much of it effectively done as well, because I've always held out that this version of Megatron would be up there with some of the other ones I really like, and so far he has been.
Yeah.
As he's been kind of clawing his way back on screen after a while off screen. Aaron, how about you? How'd you feel about the Megster?
Really liked it. Yeah, the bit with the drill and Jack, I'm all for nobility and characters, but just drive forward a little bit with that drill and you're done.
I just loved Megatron just when he turns around and he sees him there looking through the rock. He's like, well, hello.
Yeah, it's just one of those ominous moments of, oh no. I'm panning through here to see if I can find it real quick for the reaction. Because there was just a reaction in both of their faces.
Yeah.
That was just like, well, that's not what I was expecting.
And it also totally looks like Aaron picked up the stick on that one and just went like, no, we're going to talk about drilling. So, sorry.
That to me was just such a great moment out of the whole thing for Megatron. That's like, let's talk about how Megatron went, except for that bit that was so good.
I mean, there's also lots more to say about the drill that I'm sure someone will bring up the drill itself in general, because there's lots to say about that drill.
Yeah.
And all that it did. I really like the tone of that conversation. And then Megatron, like, kind of scooching his arm up to start pulling himself out. I like how practical this Megatron was. Omegas, how about you? How'd you feel about Megatron?
I think the portrayal all the way around. I mean, yes, he did get to do a lot of new stuff. We do get a little bit of an explanation as to what he's doing with Starscream. And we learn that Soundwave hears a hell of a lot more than we thought. Which, I love that. Yeah, I do love that. What Soundwave hears is what Megatron hears.
I love that we were also kind of, you know, for a while there, we haven't seen Soundwave at all. And you're like, oh, what's Soundwave even doing? And it's like, oh, he's been actually recording the entire TV show. All
right. Right. he's just got the season pass on TiVo.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but Megatron was a very rare form in this episode, I thought. He just came across as just very menacing, even in times when, you know, at the drill, when he was incredibly helpless.
Yeah. And I really liked, as I said before, that just the way that they took the, because the thing everyone says when they rewatch G1 cartoons is like, oh man, why did Megatron ever keep Starscream around? Why didn't he just shoot him? It's clear Starscream meant nothing to him and was of no use. And I like that in this one, they really kind of cleared that up of just, you know, they made this Megatron out. So they're like, He's not like the most cunning Megatron in the world. I mean, that still belongs to iterations like Beast Wars and Animated, but this is a Megatron who isn't an idiot either. Like, he's pretty eccentric. He's possibly quite crazy, but he's also very aware of the world around him, which I really enjoyed. Because that's the best kind of crazy, when it's an old psychotic dude, but he also knows everything that's happening, and he knows when you're talking behind his back. Like, he's not stupid. I really like that. So passing the topical torch around, Gog, have you got a topic you'd like to bring up?
We talked about Megatron. Let's talk about Starscream.
Yeah.
I guess, well, it's been obvious for the last several episodes. I mean, we all knew it was coming because of who Starscream is, and they're going to go down the whole Starscream wants to overthrow Megatron. And in the beginning, he wasn't necessarily like that, but we actually got to see him and his reasons for kind of wanting to do that, and eventually I think it just came into a straight up whatever, I want to be in charge. But we see once Megatron calls him out, he basically, I mean, he, I almost felt bad because the dude was literally just pleading for his life. He looked downright pathetic. And who was the character that he was talking to later about basically someone had asked him, I can't remember exactly the line now, because again, I haven't watched this in a couple weeks either now, so some of the bits are a bit fuzzy, but somebody had made the comment about
was it when he was talking to Bulkhead, or was it when it was...
Well, it was when somebody had made the comment about how it must be embarrassing to be, like, begging for your life or whatever, and he's like, yeah, totally. But I don't know. I can't remember the exact quote.
Was that might have been RC.
Okay. But, yeah, okay. Whatever. But it was just... That part was... It was pretty hilarious, because he was like, yeah, it does kind of suck to be in that position, doesn't it?
Oh no, but, that was Bulkhead. Sorry, that was. It was when he because okay. Bulkhead was holding up the rock, and Starscream's like, "Oh, must be time for you to die. You might want to beg for your life." And Bulkhead's all like, "I'm not doing any of that kind of. I'm not that pathetic." And Starscream's
"Oh yeah, yeah." And Starscream's yeah, like, that's, "Yeah, that's right. That is kind of pathetic.
It's pretty pathetic." Yeah.
yeah, but the interesting part though, because he at the end, I wasn't expecting him to do that. But he actually makes it out. He's the only one that makes it out of the cave through the collapse, and then decides to go back in to get on good terms with Megatron. And I mean, I guess it, from his perspective, and you could see his thought process as he was discussing it with himself. He's like, "Well, if I leave, I'm screwed. So I have to. Like, I don't have any choice because I have nowhere to go. Megatron's going to hunt me down and kill me. So I have to." Do something to try to earn some sort of goodwill back.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really expecting him to do that. And then he goes in and kind of doesn't gets caught up with the Autobots. And then the next Megatron sees of him is him just standing there. So his plan, maybe we see in the next episode, didn't necessarily backfire, but he certainly didn't really earn a lot of goodwill because Megatron only sees him next in a pretty humiliating position. So.
Yeah, and I really liked how, and I thought it was again like it was to me showing of a cleverness that isn't always there in cartoons. Where Starscream was about to leave, and he's like, "Well, wait, Megatron survived a detonating space bridge in the face. There's no way being buried under some rocks is going to do anything. Like he's going to come out. He's going to come after me. He's like the specter of death. Oh God!" And he like just goes back in. I don't know. And Steve Bloom did a really good job also of carrying that.
Yeah,
that desperation and like almost
paranoia. Oh, for sure, it was that oh, was yeah. That's been some of the best Starscream acting I think we've gotten in this entire series, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah,
I've been trying to curtail me bragging or not bragging, but just complimenting Starscream because I've always been a Starscream fan. I think I kind of spun the other way on this because when we hit. When we were first speculating about the show, before we even got the five-parter, we were talking about some of our opinions once some of the character bios had been revealed before the show came out. And I think like the initial Starscream we got was basically somebody could have stated any number of Starscreams, especially G1. And I was of the mindset like, okay, we're doing this again. We all know what we're going to expect. But I have to say, while certainly it is some of that, it's definitely more refined. It's more grounded in he has actual reasons for doing this. We get to see the progression.
Yeah.
And the character and the voice behind it is genius. And I mean, I have to say at this point, I think this is one of the best Starscream both characters and performances that we've ever gotten. And it's so good, and especially I mean we'll talk about partners after this, but Starscream has really been kind of stealing the show for the last few episodes, and it's really good stuff overall. I think
he's been having an actual character arc I found over the course of the show, so it's been carried really well by Steve Bloom as well, and I was like one of the three people who didn't really know Steve Bloom all that well coming into the show. So I'm just sitting here going like, "Hey, it's my first Steve Bloom experience. It's a pretty good one. Let's have him stick around for a while." Any other thoughts on Starscream, Omegas?
I just just overall, I mean, yeah. I mean, I have seen a lot of shows with Steve Bloom. I mean, yeah. In my head, he's still Spike and Roger Smith. But this is some of the best acting I've heard out of him, and it's partially just because Starscream has that range that is possible between going from the sinister to the cowardly.
Yeah,
I really think this is the first episode where we got to see a full blown G1 style Starscream, where he does have enough mindset to go back after Megatron and regain his favor, but it's the first time he's genuinely chickened out. Mm-hmm. And just immediately vacated the scene of a fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just fled.
Oh, I think that had some great animation in there, too, that that I think the two between the good, very good voice acting and some of that animation, you know, not just him running, but he like scrambles, runs, grabs ground.
And his facial expressions too are fantastic. The eyebrow, he is great proof of, you know, when this show started up, I was one of the people going like, oh man, they all have big ass eyebrows. And it's like, oh, the reason is because they are expressive as hell.
Yeah. But I really like that. I just am panning through the episode here and saw the whole as he's running away from Megatron and scrambling and trying to grab ground and then goes and then transforms into the jet and runs through all that. It's such good animation and to show just that pure desperation to get away from that situation more so than just the I'm getting out of here, feet spinning in the air and then disappear type of runaway that's been done in previous animation type things.
Mm-hmm. And I also really like that his coward, like he's not just like a whining cowardice that a lot of people tend to just like you ask anyone on the street about Starscream, like, oh, he's the little girly whiner who's always backstabbing. In this case, any shows of cowardice, I almost don't even call them cowardice. I'd say it's just, it was outright fear. Like, the strength of the Starscream also is that when he starts, you know, begging for his life or stuff, or when he gets freaked out, it doesn't feel like it's an act all the time. So many times it actually feels like it's real genuine fear. And I really like it because it makes you feel, like you said, you know, there's times where you almost feel sort of bad for him in a way. Because a lot of his emotions seem very legitimate and not just part of some big scheme.
Not just cowardice, but craven. Yeah. Just totally lacking courage.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, like, when he gets a gun stuffed in his face, he doesn't try to talk his way out of it. He just breaks down into a babbling wreck because there is a giant fusion cannon stuck into his face. And I really like that aspect of him because I like it when, you know, the flaws are a little bit less cartoony and a little bit almost relatable. Of like, well, if I had a gun stuck in my face, I'd probably be that flipping out as well. Moving along, I guess, because we're going to have a lot more Starscream to talk about in a little bit. Aaron, what's something from the episode that stuck with you?
I've kind of touched on the animation, I think, for all the characters. I don't know, again, if this is an issue of me seeing it in HD now more, or if it's something that they're just getting better at. Everybody seems to be doing a good job with facial animations and things of that aspect that really adds that additional layer beside, you know, the Japanese, you know, what we've been used to with like the Unicron trilogy and things like that, you know, from lip flappiness to the whole face is like, you know, watching Starscream and as he's talking, it's like the cheeks kind of pinch up and the eyebrows come down, but No, I gotta. And it's like the whole process. It's amazing how much that little bit adds a layer to that, like on a first watch you don't maybe see, but as we're sitting here trying to critique things, we're like, wow, that really gets it and definitely helps drive some things home. I'm just impressed more and more.
Prime is a show that I never feel bad about rewatching because I always see something new and pretty in the animation on a second viewing.
Right.
I mean, a third viewing sometimes can get a little bit of a drag, but it's a show where watching an episode twice is almost never work.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like, what the heck? I gotta watch this again.
Just sitting here for things that I'm noticing. What the heck are the things on Miko's belt? She has like two little animal-looking pouch things on the side of her belt. Why am I just now noticing this?
It's where she keeps her honey
and her cell phones.
Yes,
her cell phones apparently are immune to massive electromagnets.
Yeah,
exactly.
Transdimensional,
well, solid state. It's all fine.
Yeah.
Aaron also stole my animation thing I was going to bring up much earlier, which was just the sequence of the cave-in, and primarily the long shot of, or multiple shots that were, I think one of them was pretty long, of Starscream escaping from the cave-in, almost, at least.
Yeah, that was a long shot.
That was fantastically done, because that was this part where they could easily just have had rocks fall in front of all the characters and then just say a cave-in happened, but they made the cave-in not just feel like real intense, but they made Starscream the character who you were following as the cave-in was happening and almost made him, like, just briefly, the protagonist of that cave-in. Like, the guy you're kind of going, oh, man, Starscream, get out of there! I really liked it. And it helped, as you said, that he was also... He had just escaped pretty much getting shot in the face. And as he ran, he even had Megatron shooting at him, going, like, you know, desert me, which I thought was a great line as well, given that he was about to kill him. And yeah, I don't know, just the intensity and the desperation was very solid in that sequence, and I really enjoyed it. I guess since we're talking about animation in Rock Bottom, were there any other big animation moments that stuck out for you guys? I mean, the cave-in was the big one, but if there's anything else.
Well, it was mostly static people in rooms talking to each other and digging and moving rocks and stuff.
Yeah.
It was more, I'd say there was a lot more character stuff in this episode than there was action for the most part, mm-hmm. compared to other episodes. And that's not a bad thing.
Well, the animation carried through on that, too. I mean, like, they did a really good job of making Miko's, you know, oxygen deprivation look pretty severe at times. Like, just, like, the flittering of the eyes or, like, not really being able to keep a focused gaze anywhere, which I think is something that's really hard to get across in the 3D animation. So I was really enjoying that part of it.
How do you do asphyxia in animation?
Yeah, you know, how do you look like you're exerting yourself in an oxygenless space like that?
That's something I credit to the strength of the writing too, because how it's so easy for a cartoon to forget that. Oh wait, sealed cave, no air, and just pretend that everything is fine.
And Miko's role, like everyone, as you said, it was a very strong character. Like, as we kind of were hoping for or maybe predicted, you know, everyone getting trapped in a cave-in would mean a whole lot of character moments. I got stuff to talk about with Miko later on. But first, Omegas, have you got a point you'd like to bring up?
Jeez, let's see here.
Or we can just talk about Miko. I don't know.
I could talk about Miko.
Let's talk about Miko.
Okay, we can talk about Miko.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot in this show where, you know, these are, you know, very good. All the characters are, of course, very good friends. But there's something in this episode where, you know, where everything is going to hell. There's a Decepticon right over her, a collapsing cave, no oxygen, and Miko's still sticking by Bulkhead with tears in her eyes, and it's just something that brings a level of, I want to say, strength to the character that I didn't expect out of her.
Yeah, like, that's a moment when you could have some just snarky anecdotes and stuff, and instead they went for a very emotional reaction.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's this vibe of, okay, you are, you know, this is your giant robot friend, but you are willing to stick with them despite everything coming down around you. I want to say it's kind of like, honestly, there's like, you know, we got to see Jack, who's level-headed enough to go, okay, we have to get out of here right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's looking for RC, but at the same time, he knows that the first thing to do is get out of there. It's something that I honestly think only Miko could really pull off, is the loyalty to Bulkhead.
Yeah, and she did it in an almost Spielberg-y kind of way. Like, it made me think of the kind of thing that the scene from the first Transformers movie was trying to go for when Bumblebee gets captured. Of like, you know, you're the young human character wants to stick by their robot friend, and their robot friend is about to potentially sacrifice themselves to save them or something like that.
Right,
just the whole, you know, the human and the alien kind of feeling, and it came across really well. Also, because I think that's the, like, you know, going so far as to have Miko start tearing up was, it actually kind of surprised me, because I was like, they haven't really gone that far on emotional reactions with the human characters as far as I can remember, like not to that severe degree, and like the combination of panic and a doomed-looking situation. And it was also kind of neat how they lit in on that with... I really liked Miko's acting once the oxygen deprivation started kicking in, because it's kind of neat. Like, she's sitting there, like, she's trying to by herself, dig their way out of a mass cave-in.
Yeah.
And then the point where she kind of half-collapses, it kind of goes like, I feel strong! I was all like, oh, man, you're gone. You're like, you aren't even here anymore. What?
It almost seemed like it was halfway between her, like, super cool, kawaii, personality started dropping off, and maybe you got a little bit more of the core of, you know, I'm still going to sit here and fight and work. But, you know, like when she very limply drags the rock over to beat on Bulkhead, and then she's still concerned that, like, she's going to hurt Bulkhead by hitting his foot with this rock.
Yeah.
You know, it shows the perseverance factor without some of the crazy bouncy Miko.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of Miko's portrayal gets across how tough and sturdy Bulkhead is all the time. So it really comes across stronger when she sees him that vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to put it. And likewise, as he was in the same scene for most of the episode, Bulkhead also, I thought, was great how he displayed a lot of putting on the adult cap and kind of like almost becoming the surrogate parent for a second of like basically going like, you got to stop doing this, or you got to do this right now. I hear a drill. You got to pick up that rock and start hitting me in the leg, and like being very, it wasn't not even so much parental. It was almost like older sibling, like much older sibling telling the younger sibling what to do.
Yeah.
It was a really cool bit of interplay. I liked it. Gog, did you have any Miko Bulkhead thoughts you want to drop in, or?
I think you guys covered most of it. The for some reason, like her running into the cave, like a lot of people had a problem with that. Like, oh, it's just Miko doing stupid stuff again. I thought this was one of the few times it wasn't actually that bad. They had already scouted, at least partially scouted, some of the caves. They had determined that there was no Decepticons in there or anything. And yeah, I mean, there's always a danger of a collapse, but there really wasn't anything of note in there. So Miko's like, all right, let's go check it out, and runs in there. And I mean, compared to her running headfirst into battles and through space bridges with who knows what on the other side, this seemed pretty tame.
Yeah.
So I actually bought that someone in her position could easily do something like that. And it didn't bother me at all. I actually thought that was pretty in character without being kind of obnoxious.
I did love the line that came with it where RC is going, I can't believe she ran ahead. It's like, have you met her?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, look, if there's some place to run ahead, Miko's gonna do it.
Yeah. It's like, have you watched the previous two thirds of the season?
Yeah.
But yeah, the moments between her and Bulkhead I thought were really good. It wasn't her being stupid and not wanting to leave a dangerous situation. It's that she legitimately loves Bulkhead. And you saw her in the beginning of the season where she was bored. She kind of came to Jasper because it had been solicited to her as one of the funnest places on Earth or in America or whatever. And she probably didn't really realize that it was little more than a desert. And she doesn't really seem to have any friends, and so she would just kind of, you know, do her thing at school and then sit outside and draw in her sketchbook, and she didn't really have a whole lot going on. And at this point, I think that, I mean, even more so than the humans, like, Bulkhead has become her best friend and probably even family. He's probably the closest thing she has to family, and then her leaving him in a position where it was kind of obvious that he could die easily. She did not want to leave him, and I actually thought that was a bit of a heartfelt moment, because it wasn't her running headfirst into battle and saying, hey, let's go see zombies, or let's go, you know, kick some Eradicon ass. It was, this literally might be the last time I ever see Bulkhead, and I'm not going to leave him, regardless of how much danger it puts me in. So, I thought that was a good step in making Miko a character that I can see as a human being rather than the funny plot device.
She really, I think, did get some decent layering in this episode, which the only negative side of this is it's now even more than it already was before. It really highlights how much Raph doesn't matter in the show right now.
Yeah.
Poor dude. Is just he's not even on screen anymore. He's chilling out with Soundwave playing chess somewhere.
But there's a hilarious little point to him where the only little backstory we've gotten to him is that he comes from this very big family where it's easy to be ignored. where us as the viewers can't even find him in the show right now.
Yeah, we're becoming like his family.
And, we are his family.
You could totally make the case that this falls in line with his personality and that he kind of just likes to go away and do his own thing and not be part of large groups, and he's doing just that. When the Autobots are out doing stuff, he's just kind of, I'll stay behind and sit over here in a closet and make Lego characters or something.
Pretend I'm in the Arctic.
Yeah, he doesn't really work in groups, apparently, and that translates into the show.
I had a point I really wanted to bring up since it halfway came up before, and this was one of my big ones, moving off of the Miko Bulkhead thing. So there's this big drill machine, and I guess Jack just knows how to use drill machines. He just kind of walks up there and he's all like, all right, boop, 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 boop. All right, let's go. I was like, hold on a second there, son. Is this the same magic that you use with the fire extinguishers? Like, you can.
At least he seemed to be pushing a series of buttons until he got a graphic on the screen that seemed to imply what the drill would be doing.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, the anti-hack button or RAF just knowing how to hack government satellites and stuff.
This also felt even worse for Raph, because I was like, wow, Raph, they didn't even need you, and they got a drill machine running. Like, they didn't need your computer expertise.
Yeah.
Jack just pushed buttons. I thought it was weird. Like,
Jack has been training with Raph of random button pushing to find Cybertronian. I know math, and then you just push levers forward.
I mean, I can see there's a lot of ways to justify how he got the drill machine working, but it did make me blink for a good minute or so. When he started doing it, because I was like, hey there, Jack, how you all doing that over there? Making that drill machine work? How are you stopping it? How are you steering it? That's kind of crazy, but the drill also was kind of like it was almost the harbinger of the end of the episode. It's like, wherever it went, plot would follow, and then wherever it was going, plot would begin. So it's like, it passes by Megatron, and it frees Megatron. It lets Jack and Megatron have that spooky little conversation. And then the sound of it was all over the place during some of the other scenes. So I like drill machines as well. So I kind of felt nice that a drill machine got given the heavy task of basically being the harbinger of the plot, in a way. Anything else related to the drill machines that you guys want to bring up? Perhaps they're sexy purple.
All Jack had to do was just lean forward on those controls and be a whole lot different TV show.
Yeah, but Optimus Prime wouldn't do it.
Yeah, well,
that's what Jack said.
Optimus Prime probably wouldn't do meth too. And what's that tell you? I don't know what that tells you.
He's not a kitty.
Yeah.
In any way, shape, or form.
That's. I think that's a good thing, Aaron. Is Optimus Prime not doing meth?
Doesn't have the human biology to react. I don't know where I was going
with
that.
Yeah, that's true as well.
You know what happens when Optimus Prime does meth? He goes like, let's find out. That's what he does.
He starts putting faces back onto people.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, I guess the drill scene, or any of the anecdotes around the drill, anyone else have any drill-related points they'd like to bring up?
Well, drill points. Ah, ha, ha.
Oh, my God. I need to lie down for a second.
I wanted him to keep the friggin' thing. He did a good number on Starscream with it.
Yeah, that's kind of rough. Just plowing ahead with a drill.
Just like out of nowhere. Drill.
I was kind of bummed that the drills were not Transformers, because I like Transformers that involve drills. So maybe one of those drill machines will be in alt mode for an upcoming non-show Prime toy. Could happen.
Third party.
Yeah, third party Drillatron Prime.
They're doing those little human figures for the Entertainment 2-pack.
Mm-hmm.
Nice little size, the drill.
I don't know. I just wanted to bring up the drill things because Jack could totally drive them. But last call for drill-related points. Going once, going twice. All our drills are now rested and deactivated for the rest of the evening.
We'll see.
Oh, ooh. Got your finger on the trigger. GOG, have you got another point you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, let's talk about Megatron.
What did he do now?
So, okay, let's discuss. I kind of want to discuss that more in detail, but the why do we think Megatron was egging Jack in to basically drill him in the face? Do we think that he actually thought that he was going to be trapped down there and said, go ahead and do it? Or did he think that through the act of Jack drilling him through the face that it was going to help set him free, or he would be able to somehow counter it and use it to his advantage to escape? Like, cause it seemed to be basically saying, like, look, I'm right here, kill me, you don't have the balls to do it. Almost in a way that made it seem that he was actually trying to convince the kid to kill him. That's how... And that might have just been how good of an argument it was to try to trick him into doing it, but it was actually kind of creepy, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, this Megatron, I mean, my initial explanation for this is this Megatron is a little bit nuts, but there is a spoiler that Hasbro revealed at a convention that's been making the rounds. I don't want to specify it in here, just in case anyone hasn't heard it who's listening. And that spoiler almost makes me wonder if that may be factoring into the motivations behind what he was doing. But I think also, like, thinking back to the episode when Megatron was in Bumblebee's head or vice versa, like those two episodes, I think this Megatron has a very strange perspective on life.
Yeah. I think part of it could be a little bit of, hey, I'm helpless here, you know, but this is my way to try and mess with the situation, you know, because when he was helpless before, you know, maybe he just really doesn't like that aspect of things, you know, for being a megalomaniac dictator conqueror, being helpless really gets him down.
I just don't think this Megatron cares actually what happens to himself. Like, he's just like, if he'll just sit there, and if he's trapped and there's a drill pointed at his face and he thinks he could maybe mess up this kid for the rest of his life, he'll just be like, I dare you to stick that drill in my face, because you're going to have to live with the fact that you stuck a drill in my face.
Yeah, like the last ditch, well, if I got to go out, screw up this kid while we're at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like the Heath Ledger Joker approach of, you know, I will still win if I corrupt the most innocent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a big side of this this Megatron, and just the whole reason why he does anything. Like, it feels like he doesn't really have... Like I said before, he's not a cunning Megatron to the degree of having this grand overarching plan like past cunning ones have had. It just kind of seems like he feels like a Megatron who had that and lost it and went off to find himself and just came back a little bit disturbed.
Yeah.
Which I really kind of like, actually.
I just loved the ending of him, of Megatron, or Starscream basically just pleading with Megatron, and it's like he Starscream says something and Megatron doesn't respond. So Starscream keeps talking and Megatron doesn't respond. So Starscream keeps talking because he doesn't know what else to do. And Megatron is just glaring at him
for like I love
15 or 20 seconds straight.
Yeah, I love how this is just set up, because the scene starts with RC gun pointed at Starscream, raise your hands, which, you know, you come to expect, okay, the surrender thing. But it was to get him to hold up the rock and just leave him there, which is this nice ha-ha moment to end the episode. And then Megatron comes stomping in, and Starscream is again pleading for his life with more and more desperation. And Megatron is just staring daggers into his soul.
And Megatron, like, takes that almost kind of, you know, like, oh, Starscream kind of ending, and it makes it really dark. Because he's not like he doesn't start, because it's because he never said anything and he just stands there with that one expression on his face. Like I loved the reveal on him too, when it's like the far shot, like it was a really long wide shot, just Megatron just kind of half stepping through a hole in the cavern, just looking at Starscream like
It's funny because the glare just increases. Yeah. The only time he says anything, that whole deal, is when Starscream's like, oh, I came down here to help you, and Megatron's just like, help me. Increase glare by 0.5%, by 10,
and by 15. I love Megatron's eyes as well. Like, between this episode and Partner, it's really solidified how much I love his eye design, because it's just so unsettling. Because it's like solid red eyes with red pupils, but white irises. So yeah. it kind of has that Judge Doom effect from Roger Rabbit of just like having rings for pupils. And you're just like, ugh! Like no matter where he looks, it's like there's a pair of just these bright, psychotic, bloodlust bullseyes staring places. And I, with the glare he gives Starscream at the end of this episode, it really accentuates just how much that works. I forgot about how much I like the ending of this episode. and this Megatron, like, I'm actually kind of bummed that the only figure he's got announced so far is the Entertainment 2-pack. So I could go for a big iteration of this robot right now.
Yeah.
We also just one last little Megatron thing. We finally got to see his alt mode again briefly at the start of the episode when he flew in. And I hadn't seen it for so long that I actually had no idea what I was looking at when it flew down. I was like, who's that? Oh, right. any other Megatron talk that we want to throw out there? I'm up for it. Nope. Okay.
I mean, he had kind of just a little bit in the beginning, a little bit in the middle, a little bit in the end, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
It was him for luring Starscream down and then the Jack bit, and then at the end. So.
And yet, I feel really good about how much he did. well done, Frank Welker. Well done, writers. Well done, artists. Aaron, have you got another point you'd like to bring up about Rock Bottom?
For our RC Watch, it's pretty much locked into black now.
RC Watch.
Came up again in the last thread. Somebody had a picture of a bunch of her faces. I think there was confusion as to what we were talking about. The like vanity panel on her chest is just locked into black now. She threw away those pink panels.
I think we pretty much confirmed that what the pink diamonds were the exception, not the
animation error.
I think at this point it's.
Keep beating the joke into the ground. No.
Yeah,
I'm still watching, because I mean, like, this is jumping ahead a bit, but in Partners, they were also highly reflective, which I looked for because I saw a reply or a tweet from YouGog, actually, about the freeze frame someone had done on it, and so when I saw the episode, I noticed that they were highly reflective, and I've kind of bought into the semi-theory that perhaps some of their pinkness in some cases was just a really weird reflection thing going on. I don't think that's the entire explanation, but...
Have you gone back and watched the pink episodes?
No, I haven't.
Well, you're part of the problem, not the solution. You gotta watch it instead of continuing to speculate. Go back and watch them, and you'll see.
But I want to speculate. They
maintain a specific hue regardless, and then when that hue is not there, then they are clear and then reflect the environment. The pink parts... Why are we even still talking about this? It's over. The pink is gone. Aaron, stop bringing it up. Vangelis, go back and watch the pink episode so you can finally have an informed opinion, and then it's over. It's done.
Aaron, can you please bring up the pink watch again when we talk about Partners and act as though we never had this conversation?
I don't know what you're talking about here.
Anyway, if pink watch is going to be what you bring up, that's great. Omega.
No, for an honest thing, again, just looking through as I'm skipping through the episode to see what I want to talk about, I really hit on how well the environments are even modeled.
Oh, it was a nice cave.
Still, yeah, great cave and all that stuff, and especially how it fell in, like with all the bulkhead. Holding up that cave area, you know, looking at that was just amazing. Some of the rock looks like if you've ever been down into a cave where stalactites and stalagmites kind of glow weird because they have different layers and whatnot. And I saw some of the rocks that were doing that, and it was, as someone that really used to be into going to caves and whatnot, that was something that was interesting looking. The fact that it wasn't just like, let's make it rock. It was, no, it's more like, you know, the type of rock that would honestly be in a cave.
Yeah, proper cave surfacing.
Yeah.
And it was also dark, which did a lot to make everyone look better.
As we
mentioned before, I still feel that the Prime models tend to look their best in the dark with dim lighting. Omegas, anything else from Rock Bottom you'd like to bring up?
There's some things about the writing in this episode that I like and then didn't really like. Like, I am I kind of liked RC at the beginning where she did stick to the lessons she learned in the previous episodes about, you know, being overly protective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at the same time, there was a really coincidental writing going on where they're investigating this Energon mine with Energon that doesn't explode when you stomp on it, apparently. At the exact same time that Megatron has lured Starscream in to terminate him.
Oh yeah, I mean that's it was very clear, like, plot based coincidence. But yeah. It's one of those sort of coincidences where it felt like it worked thematically for the intent of the episode, to kind of lock everyone into just, you know, small claustrophobic rooms and make them all deal with each other one on one. The best example of it actually being Jack encountering Megatron. I think that's kind of legitimized the episode a bit more than everything else, because it was kind of like, that's why Megatron and Starscream were there. It was to cause Jack and Megatron to have to just have a one-on-one conversation just for a few seconds.
Yeah, I think I'd have more of a problem with that if it were just a random cave. Like, hey, we're going to go scope out this cave, but it was also a former Decepticon operation. So there is the fact that the Autobots are investigating it because it is a former Decepticon location, and the Decepticons are back, returning to the location. So.
That's why. But I understand really what you're saying though. For that. Yeah,
and the only reason it really bugged me, I think, was because it's just a little like, yes, there are reasons to be in the cave, but the reasons for both groups to be in the cave at the exact same time kind of irked me a little bit. Like, the Autobots just now discovered the Energon readings from this cave at the exact moment Megatron decides to punish Starscream.
Well, it might have been because Megatron had just unearthed some while he was basically following up on his suspicions of Starscream. So it's obvious he had been down in that cave because he knew that the Energon was there and the mining equipment was still like, there.
Oh, what's this? So, oh my gosh, how did we turn this corner and find this?
Yeah, it may have been that he had just been down there, basically got the evidence he needed, left to go get Starscream. When he unearthed it, the Autobots found the Energon readings, went back, and then Megatron returned while they were still there.
This all kind of reminds me, too, there's a slight callback, but I also really liked whatever the line was that Megatron said to Starscream when he started to lead him into the cave, like, walk with me or something like that. Like, this.
Oh, he said it was humor me or a synonym?
Yeah, like this really oddly passive line. Which totally made me get really freaked out, because I was like, Megatron is never, ever that passive. So Starscream is completely screwed. Something horrible is going to happen to him down here. Okay, so we covered that, we covered the timing. Anything else from Rock Bottom you guys would like to cover? Or shall we move on to partners?
There's parts and partners that harken back to this episode, so yeah. I think this episode will come up as we discuss the rest.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a few things I was holding off on because it comes up again.
That is absolutely fine. I will not hit the red button on you if you bring it up again. You know, that red button that we all clearly have at ready.
Mm-hmm. So, the one that's hooked to the electrodes.
That's right. Hamster style. Partners is the newest episode of Prime as of this recording, and it's an episode about partners. There's a very overt partnership theme, that being RC and her habit of losing partners, but there's also a really neat little just sort of miniature partner storyline of Starscream and Arachnid being forced to group together for a little bit at least. Yeah. And, I mean, it's hard for me to choose a topic I'd like to open up with, because there's so many out of this episode. Partners was to me a great episode. I was really happy to see some of the less happy with Prime crowd saying that these last few episodes have been the episodes that really got the show kicking off for them. I don't entirely agree with the notion that, you know, the show wasn't going anywhere in the first place, but it's definitely done some stuff to really get more people interested. So with partners, I guess this is actually quite a minor topic, but one thing I really enjoyed was it seemed to also make a lot of characters interact who hadn't really interacted before, primarily Arachnid interacting with other Decepticons, and also interacting with several Autobots that had been sort of absent for her episodes, like, you know, Optimus Prime, for one. But it was kind of fun having Arachnid sort of, because I did have to sort of acquiesce the criticism that Arachnid felt like she kind of came out of nowhere and then was sort of stealing the spotlight, or the antagonist spotlight for a while. And I was like, you know, I can see that because she's also not interacting with everyone all that much. But this episode, I think, really cleared up a lot of that. Like, she's kind of connected with more of the cast. So I did enjoy that. I liked how she was fully playing Starscream, and you know, we're going to probably talk about Starscream a whole lot in this episode, but I liked their banter, and I also liked how she, you know, her whole big master plan to manipulate everyone did kind of get turned over because she didn't account for the fact that Megatron didn't really give a crap about a stick that freezes people, which I loved. I loved that she returned back and she had no stick and no Starscream, and Megatron, and she's like, well, he risked damaging the artifact. And Megatron's like, I don't care about a stick. And I was like, oh man. It's like, why did you even send her out in the first place? Oh, right, you're crazy. You were just screwing with her. I don't know. I love this Megatron right now. But Arachnid did also get to have some lines with, you know, Prime, and she got to get the upper hand over a whole bunch of them. Had some great moments in this episode. So let's open up by discussing some Arachnid as far as partners goes. Gog, any Arachnidish thoughts?
Well, if you remember when we discussed the magnetic episode, what was it called?
Oh,
Metal Attraction.
That's it. We had ended with discussing as far as how Arachnid and Starscream would have relations that would benefit or harm one another. I will say, you know, because I think you had said basically that you had speculated that she might temporarily join forces with Starscream, but it would, and I think we all kind of agreed that it would end up blowing up in his face. Well, they just skipped the partnership part and just blew up in his face. So
yeah,
but
Prime does not waste time.
Yeah, but I liked how Arachnid basically went straight in and started making power plays to get herself in a position to where she could, at least in my opinion, where she had to earn Megatron's trust, become part of his inner circle, and then she could go back to scheming and doing what she would normally do, except for, you know, having to play the role of loyal Decepticon. But the problem is that's exactly what Starscream was doing, playing the role of loyal to Megatron Decepticon while having his own schemes, and much to the opposite of how we thought that might play out. No, they didn't join. There was a lot of friction there, and they don't like each other.
Yeah.
And I thought those moments were great. I guess we'll save the Starscream stuff, but the way Arachnid was, and I liked how she knew that the position that Starscream was in, basically going from second in command to Megatron willing now to kill Starscream within any mistake he made next, and Arachnid knowing that and basically keeping Megatron or Starscream under her hand, it was all good character stuff. I mean, nothing incredibly plot moving, but just seeing the reaction of those two, it really wasn't what I was expecting, and I think I enjoyed it for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on Arachnid from Aaron or Omegas?
She's again showing the fact that she has way too many alt modes.
Oh yeah, they kind of showed they showed the workings of it more in this episode, I found.
Yeah, it looks more like the legs just kind of flail around for the drill.
The spider legs. They kind of just form this wireframe, like outer framing almost.
Yeah.
Flailing, I guess, is one word for it.
Yeah, because she went back and forth with the legs being like Doc Ock walking around to like the smaller. Like the Iron Man Spider Man suit, where they're just like extra bits there to Then I'm trying to pan through while we talk to find a bit where she uses it as a drill. There we go.
Not make for good podcasting, yeah. Panning through. Yeah.
But it's the versatility of those legs that no other character seems to be doing that with anything. So I wonder if we're looking at something special in Arachnid, or if this is just she uses that bit of Transformers biology or technology to better effect than everyone else does.
Her toy is better equipped to do all that kind of stuff, I'm sure.
Maybe. Yeah, because, yeah, for Drill, she just folds her legs into, like, the sleeping bag pull-together thing that she does for her spidery mode, and then the legs just do all the work, yeah. I want to know if that's just they wanted her to do this stuff, or if there's actually something behind that to be in a story bible or later episode display.
I'm sure we'll figure it out eventually. Like, the toy will probably enter into it greatly, I imagine. But
till it comes out as a legend and we're lucky it transforms.
Yeah, exactly.
Only first edition, though.
Just give me my Arachnid toy. Omegas, any thoughts on Arachnid?
She is awfully trusted for someone who has been a loner slash traitor slash deserter for this long.
I almost want to say that, and I might be giving Megatron too much credit, I almost want to say, just especially given how he didn't really care about the object that was found and then destroyed and then repaired again, that this might have just been some test he was running on her of like,
yeah. Well, there's loyalty. The other thing, there's the other also thing, like, what's the level of her lone wolfness? Is it like Black Arachnia was in Animated, where she kind of just went off and did her own thing a whole lot, or is she known to be actively anti-Decepticon but not pro-Autobot?
The breakdown's reaction to her made me think she wasn't really known to be anti-Decepticon outright.
Yeah, it was just like she's, yeah, if I got to pick a place on the spectrum, I'm Decepticon, and yeah, I wear the badge, but I'm not, like, not Decepticon military, but Decepticon nation.
For convenience sake.
Yeah.
Omegas, Aaron totally yelled over you a second ago, so what were you going to say?
It almost occurred to me that, like, Megatron sent the two after the Immobilizer initially, and if he didn't care about it, then it does make me wonder why the hell he bothered with the first place. Whether he was calling out Starscream again and putting Arachnid in charge of it was more or less just to get demoralize Starscream even further.
That's a good point. I just feel like one of those things, like, you know, just screwing with Starscream even more, or also testing Arachnid or whatever else.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like that was his goal more so than actually just getting a stick that freezes people.
Well, there's also the thought that, you know, at the time when Arachnid was trying to pin the whole thing on Starscream and Megatron was just completely losing it, it also almost struck me as, yeah, at this point he no longer cares about the Immobilizer, because his second in command is now in Autobot hands, or so he thought at the time. You know, you know, at the point where he was just so irate that he had totally forgot that he actually wanted the thing in the first place and was just pissed off at Arachnid.
And this is also, like, you know, I call him a crazy Megatron. That coming with that territory, he is also somewhat unstable. So there is a chance that that could have been a factor as well. It's tricky to say, but I feel like it's not a stretch to explain it in one of those ways. I also want to say I really liked Megatron's flip out when Arachnid, because Megatron, he didn't really care that much about Breakdown disappearing, and so when he started to go like, "Where's Starscream?" I was like, "What's going on? I thought you didn't like Starscream anymore." And then when he gave the reasons, I was like, "Man, I love this Megatron." He's because he is not stupid. He's like, "Just so you know, Starscream was also the second in command, with access to all kinds of our intelligence. And if he's dead, he can't do anything about that. But if he's alive and captured, this could go pretty badly."
Yeah. Should have just put one in him as he was walking, as he was taken off, not left him alone.
But if we're through the Arachnid section, Gog, let's talk some more partners.
Let's since it flows right into it, let's talk about Starscream.
Yes.
I loved the opening bit with him and Arachnid, where Starscream, where we've seen him previously to this. I mean, at least until, I'd say even a bit after Megatron came back. Well, you know, because we see the opening, the pilot. Starscream has been in charge for a long time because Megatron's been gone. So Megatron comes back, and Starscream still has a pretty significant place of power. We see him get his ass beat a little bit when Megatron is revived. actually, a couple times he seemed to have been, because when Never mind. I don't want to speculate, but the so anyway. But basically, Starscream has, and even when he wasn't in power, he still maintained a level of power. At least so he thought. Like with the whole breakdown thing, him going to rescue breakdown and kind of clandestine mission and telling him that one day you're going to have to choose sides and all that. And it was still like, even now that Megatron's back, it's like, oh, Starscream is still, he's still got something planned. Something's coming. And so to see him reduced to how he was in this episode, basically him giving orders to Arachnid, Arachnid's like, dude, you're done. Like, you're not the Starscream in charge anymore. Like, you're on the S list, dude. Like, I could so much as whisper a rumor into Megatron's ear and he'd probably blow your head off. So you got, there's nothing that you can do. It's almost like you're the manager at a store and then getting demoted down to like stock boy, and then the people that worked for you, you're like, hey, when you get a second, could you grab that crate up here? Like, whatever, dude, I don't work for you. Go clean a toilet. Like, it just, I felt bad for him. Like, it was so awful the way Arachnid was treating him. And then, like, every time, like, and then it's like he gets frustrated and actually seems to be getting legitimately angry to the point to where he might even get physical. And then Arachnid just, like, whoosh, just shoots him with the web. She's like, I don't even need you. Like, you're nothing. Like, just sit here and die. Like, no one, like, I'm, like, everyone is, they're answering to Megatron now. There's no reason for you to be here. And I'm like, man, like, I feel bad for Starscream. And that's why I'll be disappointed too. I mean, I'll be honest. I was a little disappointed when Starscream was doing the whole pleading thing with RC and then used that as an opportunity to basically injure her, because I was really, really, really hoping that he was legitimately on his last leg and knew that he had nowhere to turn and was going, and I knew, even if that had happened, that it wasn't going to be long term, because he's Starscream, and it's not, he's not going to work with the Autobots. He's not an Autobot. And I mean, and if they wanted to go down that road, that would have been very interesting, and that would have gone into what I said before about taking Starscream in a new direction, because that would have been awesome. But that was never on the table. This was all just a hoax. But I kind of wish that it would have lasted a little longer, where they kept Starscream as a prisoner and maybe trusted him a little bit, or at least kept him in a prison cell and he's, you know, whispering in their ear and maybe manipulating things a little bit, or legitimately seeing if he could give this a shot, and ultimately later it didn't work out. But it's like, yeah, like, again, going back to the Starscream acting, like when he was pleading with RC, like it was like, oh, this is so good. Like, I bought every line of that. I thought that Starscream was legitimately, like, saying, like, no, like, yeah, I made mistakes, and he let the bit slip when he killed Cliffjumper, and he's like, no, okay, yes, I lied about that, but it was just such good character stuff.
That whole part was in hindsight, like, when I look back on it, that whole whole sequence was so oddly multifaceted to me, because I don't think at any point he was outright lying, but I think he was just utterly desperate, because he, you know, everything else, like, you know, by the end of the episode when he makes that declaration, it's like nobody stands by him anymore. Like, he has nobody.
But so that's why I was a little disappointed when he when he gave that up so quickly because he saw, and I agree, I don't think he was lying either, but as soon as he saw the opportunity, it was bloop. So all that whole pleading to be an Autobot thing barely lasted 5 or 10 minutes. And I would have liked to have seen that to go on a little bit more.
Yeah, it gets multifaceted when because the moment he struck RC, I was like, wait, what's going on now? Because he's like, oh, they're gonna take you out like I took out Cliffjumper. And I was like, oh, so this is all just like some plot to kill another Autobot. But by the end of it, I thought to myself, like, it felt more like that was just him kind of snapping for a little bit. Like, where he's like, all right, this is how it's going to be. I'll kill you, too, because I did it before. And then when she gets him on the ground and has a blade to his neck, he's like, just put me out of my misery. And then she's about to do it, and then he freaks out, and he's like, wait a second. And I was like, just the way that he's flying up and down and like, just this whole almost emotional roller coaster of where he's coming from. Like it felt like it wasn't him being evil. It wasn't him being a coward. It was him just having a legitimate breakdown.
I think that all that leads well, very well into his speech at the end, which I thought was really well done.
Yeah.
Like his whole, like, I have nowhere to go. I'm just gonna, he's like, whatever, I'm going to be on my own. And it, while, and I think the thing with the Autobots helped cap that off a little better, mm-hmm. because otherwise he just would have left the Decepticons and been like, all right, fine, I'm on my own. But at least with this, he goes from the Decepticons, he pleads for the Autobots, like saying, look, I got nowhere to go, do this. Realizes pretty quick, this isn't going to work. I killed her partner, she was going to kill me, fine, whatever. And then basically caps that off saying, okay, fine, I'm going to be on my own.
And
I kind of think that's what this whole I'm going to be an Autobot for 5 minutes thing was. It was more of a, well, I can't be with the Decepticons, let me be with these guys. Oh, wait, that's definitely not going to work. Fine, I'm on my own. And I think from that way you look at it, it actually works out pretty well.
I also think that some of that was just him scrambling to, you know, his idea of what you do with the prisoners, you kill them. And surely he knows, you know, as the Autobots are more lenient. Well, maybe I can be with you, because I think it's the same thing that was the scramble that he did there when RC was throwing down the key saying that, you know, hey, Cliff wouldn't kill a helpless prisoner, but, you know, here's your chance. You know, that whole lead up to that, I think was scramble and no, I don't want to do this because then you're going to kill me. But wait a second, maybe if I, you know, kind of flail around a little bit, then I can get it. And then, you know, hurt her the way that he did. You know, I think it was all scramble play. It was try and come up with something and think on your feet and play the coward because everybody knows I'm cowardly, and then go to it from there.
I really liked that. Basically, and this goes into RC's role in the episode, but I liked that he was entirely contented being, you know, cuffed twice and thrown in a box, basically. And he was fine with it. Like, he was like, this is better than being shot in the face with a fusion cannon. And that was, I don't know, like, because the whole thing to me, it felt like something that my initial reaction would be, oh, it's going to be some kind of grand scheme. And at the end, it to me, it wasn't. It was just a series of desperate actions, pretty much. And then his speech at the end being the culmination of it, where he's like, I can't trust any of them. They all want to kill me. And then when you think about it, you're like, you know what? Him going off on his own, it feels utterly justified. Just like his power play against Megatron felt kind of justified, it also feels completely, completely understandable that he'd just be like, I'm on my own. It's up to me to stay alive because everyone else is going to kill me.
Yeah, and it remains to be seen if his whole trying to recruit troops against Megatron, you know, because this has been something he's been doing not so subtly, at least to the viewer, for many episodes now. And now that he's on his own, basically denouncing his Decepticon membership, like, if that whole thing was little more than a sleight of hand to make you think that something was going to happen that wasn't actually going to happen, and then Megatron all of a sudden swooping in like, I know everything, you're going to die. I think from a writing standpoint, setting that up for that long is pretty awesome. Because at this point, it could still come up. He could still be like, look, I'm not a Decepticon anymore, but you know, we can still have our own loyalties or whatever, and I can have somebody on the inside. You know, something like that might come up, but if it doesn't, then that means that all this Starscream slowly trying to build his secret force against Megatron was nothing more than I wouldn't say it's nothing more, because from a character point of view, that was what he was doing. But the fact that kind of gets dropped because of a holy crap moment, and if that doesn't get referenced again, mm-hmm. I think that's pretty cool that they would take the effort to build something like that up and follow through with it in a totally different way.
Yeah, and well, I mean, even if they follow up on it, like I'm almost thinking just the way that the folks that Starscream did talk to him, primarily Knockout and Breakdown, the way that they operate, I could totally see it as him going like, well, you see, they're on my side. We're about to take you out, like showing up at the bridge of the ship or something. Going like, you know, it's time for the coup d'etat. Knockout, Breakdown, to my side. And the two of them just shrugging and shooting him in the back or something like that, because Megatron offered them something better, like not getting killed. Or
yeah, but after that speech he gave at the end of this episode, it just seems like all that was for naught, and he was accepting that. Mm-hmm. He was accepting that everything he had been, the Decepticons' second in command, when they thought Megatron might never come back, actually the first in command, Megatron coming back and him basically trying to engineer his euthanization, and then when that didn't work, trying to build a secret army, and now reduced to this, what happened with Arachnid, where even the lowest level troops just spit on him, and all that coming to the most anticlimactic ending for Starscream ever, I can see how that would just how he would literally just disconnect his ties with all of that and just become this bitter thing that's just out for revenge against everyone.
Yeah. No, it's really fascinating to watch, and I'm really into this. I hope that whenever this Starscream plot comes to an end, it comes to an end just as well as it's been carrying through, because I've said many times, I'm just so impressed that it feels like Starscream's actions are ones you can look at and analyze and deduce the justifications for why they're happening with what's on screen without coming up with off-screen reasonings. And it all helps also that Steve Bloom is doing such a good job as Starscream. Easily one of the best Starscreams we've ever had. And I want to just kind of throw back a little bit, but that whole that whole bit with him talking to Soundwave and just the reflection of his face in Soundwave's face being, you know, almost a total perfect example of what I said way back about what I love about Soundwave's design, that when you talk to him, you have to look at yourself, basically.
Yeah.
About that too, I completely forgot about that. Again, the whole like Starscream not lying thing, it's like I almost want to believe that at this point, after Megatron spared his life for this second time, and he's basically on the, if you piss me off again, you're just going to get ripped in half like Jazz and thrown into a canyon. It legitimately looked to me like Starscream had renounced any power play that he wanted. Like, he was like, I've seen the error of my ways. I'm never going to win this. I know it. But at least I have a place in the Decepticons. And then put that on top of what happened with Arachnid and him realizing he doesn't have a place with the Decepticons anymore, because the fact that everyone knows that he's a schemer and no one is going to trust him anymore, and then you have somebody like Arachnid who will just as soon see him die than take another step in the other direction, like I said, I really felt bad for Starscream.
Yeah.
But I want to believe that he meant every word of that. That he was done. He was done with his power play.
And like the way it struck me is the way he said all that, and he came through a doorway. I also was just sitting there going like, man, it's like, I imagine that if there were other Decepticon troopers who had things to apologize for, it's almost like Soundwave is this walking confessional. Where it's like, if you want to renounce what you said, you come to Soundwave, because Megatron hears everything Soundwave hears. And this is, the whole concept of that was really cool to me.
See, that's where I was thinking it was the other way, where Soundwave, where Starscream was using Soundwave to, air quotes, leak the fact that Megatron has broken him to keep, you know, maybe he is going to go, you know, down low for a while of not being such an out and out traitorous guy, but, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, not kind of butt kissing, but not directly.
Yeah, but because even
he's already in Megatron's bad graces, so to go to him and just be like, grovel, grovel, whine, whine, it's just going to be like, shut up, go away. But you know what? I'm admitting this heartfelt confession to somebody else, not to Megatron. I did Megatron bad. I know I got to make it up to him, but you know, I got to tell you how bad I feel about this, knowing that anything that goes on to Soundwave gets reported to Megatron, and maybe not being quite so direct of trying to get back in good graces, but by hanging my head and saying, oh, gee, I really messed up to a third party, maybe it won't seem as schemey as going in and licking a boot.
Well, the reason why I'm on the side of really being able to buy that it was all not a scheme at all, or not even a half truth, but like just what he believes now, is the fact that it was paralleled in that internal monologue at the end. Just to me, I don't know. Like, I'm sure it's something that can get cleared up very easily later on, but it felt very legit to me, just given the structuring of the episode. Because my first thought also was like, I thought, oh, here's Starscream doing his little sycophant bit again. But the way the episode played out, I kind of changed my mind about halfway through. I was like, this is feeling a little bit different. And much like Gog, I was actually kind of like, this is making Starscream into a very tragic figure without making him a hero.
Yeah, and especially the fact that when he's doing that confession to Soundwave, Soundwave was his subordinate. Like, watch the pilot. Like, and then all the episodes. I mean, we obviously know that Soundwave's loyalty was always to Megatron. That was never a doubt. But in Megatron's absence, Soundwave reported to Starscream. He was his direct subordinate, his right hand man. And now all the Decepticon workings are still going on, and Starscream has become basically nothing. And so he. Like, everyone that he passes in the hall has more clout in the Decepticons now than him, whereas just a few episodes prior, he was leading them with an iron fist. So it's... I want to believe, and I'm sure that we will know at one point or another as we see what happens with Starscream, but I believe, and I want to believe, that he was broken, and that's why this Starscream is more interesting to me than, like, say, G1 Starscream. I love G1 Starscream, don't get me wrong. He was a great 80s character. But we've had how many incarnations of him since then, as we mentioned before. And I think this, the more I think about it, it's this Starscream is doing so much more than him, because he started off pre-G1 Starscream. Just a loyal soldier, yeah, snarky. Doesn't really like the fact that Megatron's back, but he's still going to be loyal. Attempts to save Megatron's life. It doesn't work. Megatron dies. Megatron comes back. He's insane. Starscream wants him dead. And we get to the point to where he is the G1 Starscream for a while, and Megatron breaks him. Starscream is broken in this episode. Mm-hmm. At least, you know, at least that's the way it appears. And just to see him go, because everyone always wonders, like, well, what would happen, or why would G1 Megatron keep Starscream around? And as you had said before, it was a little bit of the whole Megatron, like, oh, well, I'm doing it for my amusement. But we also see in this that while Megatron is certainly keeping him around, like, in previous incarnations of Starscream, he would still remain, like, his second-in-command through all this. Mm-hmm. And that ended. Like, Starscream is little more than just some dude who's now walking around in the hallways sulking. Like, all of his power and ambition and everything is gone, to the point to where he just wants to be able to live. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I've seen the arrow of my ways, just allow me to take another breath the next day. And, like, that much development right there for Starscream, I think, definitely puts this version way over the top of so many that we've had before.
Starscream is cool, and I want a figure. it's my best summary on that. Omegas, have you got any additional thoughts on Starscream, or just the Bluminator's performance?
At this point, I think it's completely worn out. I honestly don't know where to continue.
Yeah, I don't know. You're kind of like almost the dude who knows of Steve Bloom before this role among the rest of us. So like, Just having said all this, like, do you think, like, I think you kind of mentioned it before, but do you think this is one of Steve Bloom's better roles that he's done?
I would say yes, because it's a role that he's had a lot more depth in. Like, mm-hmm. his most famous roles are, like, Spike from Cowboy Bebop, Roger Smith from Big O.
Yeah.
They're roles where, character-wise, there is a lot going on, but they keep this certain attitude about them. Where Starscream will go from, you know, menacing and cruel to cowardly and just feverishly scared for his life. It yeah. gives him such a wider range than I'm used to hearing from him that I can really hear, I mean, not just Steve Bloom as Starscream, but him performing as an actor.
Yeah.
And really showing his range.
Oh, awesome. That's what I was wondering about quite a bit, actually, was you know, just in terms of what one can expect from Steve Bloom, like, what if this was just, if I was overreacting, if someone was going to go like, oh, and Steve Bloom's done this before, this is just what he's like, he's awesome. But I kind of feel a little bit of a, just a small little tinge of happiness if this is also one of his most, like, deeply acted roles in recent times. As it is starting to sound, so that is super cool. Yeah, we talked the hell up out of Starscream, so let's move along to Aaron, who we can talk about. So that Aaron character is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I really noticed in this episode eyes.
Yep,
and I think it was because of Arachnid has purple eyes. Or kind of,
yeah, they're purple. They're like purple segmented.
Yeah, whereas, you know, everybody else, Prime has like almost like a baby blue eye to Megatron's blood red eye, and then RC, and I had to go back and check, and it is, but it really seemed like as she was contemplating killing Starscream then and there, the red rings in her eyes started popping out a little bit more.
Oh,
and I don't know if it was because I was looking for it or because they were just going really tight in on the face, but I'm like, hold on. And I actually checked back in Rock Bottom because it was a point that I had actually written down that I wanted to talk about. And her eyes did have red rings back then too, but it just really seemed like it popped more, you know, because everybody else, yeah. you know, all the Autobots are blue and then RC's is a deeper blue, but the red outside and red, like, middle ring tend to pop more. She's like, I'm going to kill this guy. And it was just like, ooh, is this more of the whole, you know, the eyes are the window into the soul, and you're getting this subliminal message that she's about ready to flip, you know? But it just, again, the expressiveness that can come into them now is just amazing, and seeing it in those eyes really pulled it. And Starscream was major too. He had for as much talk as the last episode of the little bit of groveling that he did there, bringing out his face.
This one was just
he went from totally drawn, oh my god, she's going to kill me, to, you know, when then he was standing over her and Superior, it was totally different. You know, it's the same Starscream face, but it was just totally different.
Yeah,
expression that came out of the whole thing.
Starscream's face is over these last two episodes. Starscream's facial animations have become so great at conveying what he's doing. Yeah. I've said it so many times, but I'm so happy that the facial animations in the show are so expressive. I'm so happy that they put in those separate eyebrow pieces.
Yeah, well, it's even like the ends of the eyebrows will waggle even a little bit and things.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy awesome, the fact that they get into as much detail as they do. It always seems like I come back to how impressed I am with animation. I don't know if I've just been let down or hurt before.
Well, I'm sure, you know, in the back of our heads, we're always thinking about the Unicron trilogy, because it's not all that old yet. And we had a great run with animated.
Right.
And I'm sure that a lot of this, in my case, I always have a feeling like some of my praise is also coming from the fact that I was so worried about whether Prime would be any good. I'm trying not to downplay my praise too much, because I think some of it's also quite legitimate. But I think that the expressiveness is also coming from the fact that this was a weekly made-for-TV CG show, which is one of the places where like weekly cartoons can lose expressiveness quite fast. In anime, you can have the faces with the mouth flaps, or in cheaper anime, and then in cheaper CG, you can just have these completely blank faces. And the last time we had CG Transformers on TV was Cybertron and Energon.
Yeah, that was lip flap.
Yeah, and those were two lip flap shows. So I'm sure that might be at least subconsciously entering into some of the impressed reactions that you and I are having here. But not to downplay the compliments that we have for the CG, because I think it is also legitimately very good CG, especially for a televised TV show.
Right. Well, I mean, if we want to be a little bit balanced on CG, again, we do get an instance of Bulkhead looking almost wireframey.
There was a point in this episode because he clipped. I'm sure he clipped.
I figured out what it was that was really getting me is, so all of, you always see, again, on the HD, you see the weathering that's on their metal of everything. And Bulkhead's is really obvious on corners. Mm-hmm. And so when it's pulled back, you don't see the rest of the weathering, the rest of the patina on everything. All you see is the harder weathering on the corners. And that's what got my eye in the last time. What was the Daylight episode that we really ragged on that all the characters kind of had that look.
That was,
and I realized
the last one, that was Metal Attraction.
I really realized that that's where it came from, because you see a lot of good, close-ups, the same close-ups where I saw the more red in RC's eyes. You go back and forth to her chest looking like it's relatively smooth because you're at, you're seeing waist up. And then when you have the real tight end of the face, you can see more of the scratches in the paint that make it less obvious. It doesn't pull your eye to it as much, I guess. So it's a place where maybe they need to tweak some settings on guys like Prime and Bulkhead that have big surfaces with hard angles and wear on the corners and those darker colors. They need to tweak back that weathering a bit to keep it from looking quite so bad. And telling animators how to do their jobs.
I'm sure if any of the animators or artists working on the show are listening to this, I hope that they are. I hope that they're getting this much praise from the people they work with in the office. I mean, and the show's already got an award coming to it. I believe, like, what, whatever the TV awards are, the Emmys,
Daytime Emmy or something.
Yeah, Daytime Emmys. So I mean, they're getting the adulation they deserve. But I hope that they are hearing these kind of compliments and these criticisms as well.
Now, if they're listening to the show, they're rolling their eyes and saying, "No, it's setting 9. Damn it! What the hell? You guys don't know what we're talking about.
Like, you don't know what a wireframe is.
Yeah, you're just making up words now."
Anyway, moving along, Omegas, do you have another point you'd like to bring up about partners?
There was something in this episode that kind of played into a point from the previous episode that just kind of made me sit back and wonder, at what point do we kill someone in this war? Because we saw in the last episode where Jack does have the opportunity to end Megatron outright, doesn't do it, and then in this episode we come to the same moral decision. Starscream's weak, his wings are still cupped, and RC is ready to deliver a fatal blow and takes the moral high ground again.
It feels like it's almost an antithesis to the movieverse. Optimus Prime basically states outright something that flies completely in the face of the movie Optimus Prime, which is that he basically says that you have to have the hope that someone can turn around, because without that, there's no chance to ever have peace. And I was like, you are not the movie Optimus Prime. I'm not saying that as a mean thing. I'm just saying you are literally the antithesis of the Optimus. Like, Peter Cullen, you are voicing the antithesis of the character you voice on the big screen. And I like
it. Who are you and what have you done with my Optimus Prime?
I actually really like that line a lot. And it made me go, it made me think, okay, this is a little refreshing.
Yeah.
After what we've gotten, for sure. And it's not that you blindly trust everyone. I mean, I don't believe for a second that he would have openly let Starscream walk the halls of their base after a day or two.
There's a reason why Starscream was locked up in a box the entire time.
But at the same time, he's the kind of guy that's like, if someone needs redemption, then we have to, we don't execute them by saying any last words.
Yeah.
So I think that went so far, especially like after my complaints with the thing about Breakdown, of where he seemed to quickly dismiss Breakdown's redemption, and at least with this, he seemed to be a little more open to it. So
yeah, it's really makes you wonder what Breakdown did in the past.
One thing back to the point here. We know RC. You know, I understand that there is a different direction toward the moment here, where it's not just finishing someone off at a moment of vulnerability. It's RC overcoming this need for revenge that she has inside her, mm-hmm. which just adds a bit of a twisted dynamic to the character that I actually kind of like.
Oh, definitely. But, I mean, yeah, we'll go into that in a sec.
but this is a character who shot Megatron literally on his deathbed on life support, mm-hmm. and now she's taking the moral high ground.
It's the growth from being the one who would shoot the dude in the deathbed to.
There's also the difference between behind enemy lines and this is a prisoner.
Yeah, and also like
maybe.
Yeah, like, there was a definite aspect to that, and also. Like, right before she did it, the reason she stopped was I think more so that she saw Bumblebee just kind of, like, watching her. Like, yeah. To see what she's... Like, because he didn't try to interfere, but he was kind of standing there going, like, well, what are you going to do? Like, yeah. are you gonna do it, or are you gonna be the bigger one?
And I kind of wondered, was it that, or was it still playing on the fact that Bumblebee's the youngest of them? You know,
Do I want to,
he's still kind of maybe got a little bit of optimism in his life and just be like, no, this is war. Cacao. You know.
I like that moment also because literally the line you dropped there, it's so gleefully steps all over the notion the live action movie presents of this is war, thus you kill everybody.
Yeah, you rip their face off, rip their eyeball.
Prime said it in the last movie, and it's one of those lines where I go, that doesn't sound like Optimus Prime, where he goes, we will kill them all.
Yeah.
And the Autobots are not above killing. I mean, they killed Skyquake.
Yeah.
So it's not like there haven't been any deaths on the Autobots' hands.
I don't mean that in a negative way, but it's how they happen almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still, there's still something in my head going, this is supposed to be war. You know, ugly things happen, but they seem to choose, you know, very unusual times to go to that route rather than when it would seem just as appropriate.
Yeah,
I mean, Starscream might have been a prisoner, but he had already tried to gut RC, hacked her in the side, which anyone who watched the 86 movie knows that's where Transformers most vulnerable.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, the thing was it was more of RC was wounded. Starscream almost killed her. RC kind of pulls out and whoops him up a little bit, and then she sees Bumblebee there, and then basically passes out. Starscream's wounded and kind of hobbles off, but it's mostly because she passed out, and then Bumblebee like runs up to her to make sure she's not dead. And in the confusion, he kind of runs off. It just seemed at that point. Everyone's goal, or well, not everyone being Bumblebee.
Yeah.
At that point, Bumblebee's priority was making sure that RC wasn't going to die, and so I mean that was the impression that I got from that. I have a feeling that they would have kept Starscream as a prisoner. I mean, there was no, I didn't really see any reason to execute him, but they had him. He tried to kill RC, but in the confusion of Bumblebee making sure that RC was alive, he kind of hobbled off. But RC definitely made the decision to not kill him, but if Bumblebee hadn't been standing there, she would have. One thing too is this kind of addresses my problem of like, well, from Metal Attraction, like they had Arachnid is standing right there, and they're kind of in this unconscious pile, her and Breakdown, and then RC just kind of shrugs her shoulder and says, let's leave, let's get out of here. And it, like, that always seemed a little strange to me, and it almost seems as if that episode would have played better if it had come after this one.
Yeah.
Because then at least you're showing that RC has kind of started dealing with those demons. And I don't even think, I've never really gotten the impression that RC is this crazy person out for revenge. She's never, I mean, she's kind of made the comment before about you know, making sure that Cliff Jumper's death wasn't for nothing, and then obviously she has some pretty crazy feelings against Arachnid for what happened in the past, but I've never really pictured her much as somebody who's hell-bent on revenge. In fact, they didn't really mention her and Cliff Jumper very much at all since the pilot until this episode, and it was obviously because it was foreshadowing what was it was leading up to.
I wonder if maybe a bit of that could be Fanon played off as she was up there kind of picking at that scab. So she was remembering this and, oh yeah, remember that vendetta I promised. And, you know, again, it's a for the convenience of the episode thing, but you know, maybe there's some of that to play into it, because I sure as heck would think that, you know, if this episode she was ready to cap Starscream as a prisoner, had she known in the last episode, instead of leaving him holding up a cave wall, it would have been, okay, you helped Bulkhead get out, thanks. Now while your hands up in the air, oh, you know, you're not a prisoner. Bang, bang, there you go. Ta, type of deal. You know, I think that had she had the Cliff Jumper death knowledge, that things would have played out differently. Or at least I hope that they'd be good enough to, in that completely different storyline, build it differently, I guess, is where I'm going with that.
It's just, but I do kind of agree on Gog's point. This is 19 episodes after the fact, after she lost Cliff Jumper, but only now has she really shown this, like, virulent, revenge-crazed side of hers. It seemed like a plot point that they meant to do sooner than this, but never quite got around to it.
Yeah, because I totally bought into the revenge thing that was going on, but I can also see how it did sort of take a strange sideline for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, they also showed, too, I mean, I agree that that didn't happen in episodes, but it's like, the last time we saw Cliff Jumper, like, they went up to that, where she placed his horn down, and they had kind of like their little ceremony where they're like, okay, he won't be forgotten. There's now only the five of us or whatever. And then RC kind of just drives off on her own. And that's kind of the last time we ever saw that. But at that point, all she really did was stick Cliff Jumper's horn, broken horn, on the ground. But when we see that site in this one, there's actually a pretty large pile of rock. So, I mean, you know, it's probably reading too much into it, but I mean, the impression I got from that was that RC has probably come back there a few times and built him a little memorial. And I got the impression that maybe every once in a while, when, you know, she's feeling lonely or whatever, or wants to get some stuff on her mind, she goes there and talks to Cliff Jumper.
Yeah, so that's totally what I got too. Cause I mean, let's just flow it now. I was going to bring up RC as the next topic, cause she had quite a bit to do in this episode as well. And I actually really liked the scene of her going up there and doing the little talk to the gravesite bit, because it's the kind of thing that you can very easily leave out of a cartoon about robots. Because that's the kind of scene where I wouldn't be surprised to see that in you know, like a, like I haven't watched a lot of Resolute yet. That's on my list of things to do, a Resolute Renegades. G.I. Joe Renegades, but that kind of scene, I would see that in a show like, you know, a G.I. Joe cartoon. I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. In this show, though, it really got me happy, because I was like, oh, you know, they're remembering that these are, like, they've done it many times already, but they were really specifically remembering that these are also still very human characters for robots, and it felt really cool having that little scene and having the, just like the little brief moment of emotional reaction out of RC, which I think we've only really otherwise seen in the episode where she was flashing back to what happened to her previous partner, whose name just flew out of my head. Cannot remember it now.
Crank?
Nope.
Wasn't
a crank. But the last time we saw any, like, that level of emotion out of her on the less angry side was when she was flashing back to her previous partner. So I like that she had that little moment of, like, just a you know, cracking the voice and the voice acting and stuff like that, and then going like, "But I'm gonna get him for you, Cliff." I kind of enjoyed that scene because it was nice to see more. Much like it was nice to see so much emotional range out of Starscream, we also got a similar amount of range out of RC, rather than just "I'm mad and I'm tough."
Yeah, I will admit there's part of me that can't take it completely seriously when she's, you know, just screaming in terror over someone named Tailgate.
Yeah, I mean that's always the suspension of disbelief of Transformer names.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it just comes across a little bit silly. Like, I wish they'd picked a stronger name.
Yeah, like Windbreaker.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know. If we haven't been aware of the name Cliffjumper for the past 30 years, and
yeah,
if Cliffjumper came out of nowhere, that would probably sound pretty silly too.
Yeah.
To be fair,
I am totally not going to say anything about Erector. Just pointing that out.
Right.
But I was really enjoying RC's, like, RC and Starscream were really the winners of this episode for me, in that they both got to have their own little stories. They got their own progression. They had a pretty cool fight scene as well. And I really liked how raw stuff got with them. It was really cool. I was really excited during the episode. But any other thoughts on RC? Gog, as one of our resident RC fans here, how'd you feel about her portrayal?
Oh, well, I mean, I think we covered a lot of the important bits, but I mean, I for one don't hope that they don't do a big turnaround with RC where she's like, "Oh, you know, I don't need revenge, whatever." Like, and I don't think that's going to happen, but because that's always been part of the character that's been interesting for me, because like the whole out of his head bit with Megatron, like how she saw Megatron. It wasn't like she was going to kill him out of anger. She's like, I'm sure I'm going to get the quote wrong, so, but at least conceptually in her head, like, she's like, "I could win this war right now." Yeah. with one pull of a trigger. And it wasn't so much as revenge. It was just like, RC is a soldier, and she, like, yeah, she's not like, okay, with Starscream, like, they had Starscream prisoner locked up in cuffs. She's not like Movie Prime where she's just going to execute a defenseless Decepticon right there, right here now. But when the moment calls for violence, she's not afraid to do what needs to be done in the sense of war. And I think that goes back a little bit to what Omegas was saying before. But that's always been an interesting aspect of that character, in that she has this really soft heart, and she's a fun character to be around, and she's also incredibly professional in the field, and she's also not afraid to do what needs to be done. And she's just really well-rounded in that way, but also definitely has some emotions about the whole thing, too. So yeah. I hope that... I would hope that the cap on this of, like, her, quote-unquote, learning a lesson or whatever, is more of, I don't need to let revenge cloud my judgment. Maybe something subtle like that.
Yeah.
But I hope it's not a complete character change for her in the way that she does battle and fights the war, because, to be honest, I haven't really seen anything in RC that I would consider much of a negative trait when it comes to stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Certainly she went a little over the top with Starscream, like, but she didn't. She could have killed Starscream. Like, she could have just shot him in the head right there, and she didn't. She was going to give him a fighting chance. And that's still pretty honorable, if you think about it. Yeah. Because that's more of a chance than Starscream gave Cliffjumper. In fact, when you look at, like, the old-timey, like, Wild West, and, like, we meet on the field of honor, like, French duels and stuff, it's man versus man on equal ground, and she was giving him that much of a fighting chance. So, like, I still have a hard time trying to believe that RC had much of a lesson to learn in the first place, other than she was doing that out of revenge, and even though she gave Starscream a fighting chance, it also gave him an equal chance to kill her as well. And was her life really worth that? So maybe that particular action that she took of releasing the prisoner in order to kill him while none of her teammates were around, and there was the possibility that she could die, that, I guess, was actually kind of silly. But outside of that, I don't think RC really has many lessons to learn when it comes to how she's handled this stuff.
No, it's all more about, you know, it's a very classic story, but it's all about, are you going to be the monster that's going to just be consumed by your revenge, or are you going to settle your fight? You know, she's still going to settle that fight, I'm really sure. Somehow.
Oh, for sure.
But she's going to settle with both of her vendettas. But
and I understand the lesson of not wanting revenge to turn you into a monster. Mm-hmm. But up to this point, I've seen no signs of RC ever turning into a monster, other than the shock of here is my friend and more that died. Now before me lies his killer, and I've just learned that, and it's me and him. That's a pretty emotional situation to find yourself in, and even the best. Even the best of characters would find themselves in a struggling situation.
Well, that was the whole strength of it, is that that's the ultimate temptation that she was never presented with before, which is that, you know, with Arachnid, she's met Arachnid many times, but it's always been Arachnid. Often it's Arachnid getting the drop on her, if not being utterly prepared for a fight. This was literally, she was given the choice of, like, you know, if you think that revenge is going to make you be able to move on, you know, now you're going to be able to take revenge in the most unjust way, and it'll be the easiest way. Are you going to do it? And that was kind of like the choice, I think, that she was
given. Yeah, and she still didn't do it.
Yeah.
even under all those circumstances, she was going to unlock Starscream's cuffs and let them fight it out, and was going to risk her life in order to get the revenge. But it wasn't, I would say it wasn't even revenge. It was just, I'm going to fight you now. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to meet you out on the street, I'm going to let you know what's going to happen, and then we're going to do this. So I still have a hard time believing that she really did anything wrong, other than it was kind of silly to put her life in danger when she had no backup. I mean, but other than that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's something where I'm kind of like, I feel really good about how the episode did it. So I think that it's because it was such extenuating circumstances, they literally did the whole thing of, like, you know, we're going to take you out of your element, we're going to take you out of your soldiering element, and we're going to give you the choice to just take this gun and pop a cap in the dude's head. And that she didn't do it. I mean, that was basically the character growth moment, because up until that point, she'd never had the chance to take revenge, or I still call it revenge just because it was still driven by the fact that, you know, it's a dude who killed her partner. But that for either of her partners, both their killers, she'd never had that chance before. And that's what made it work for me, because it was like throwing the pistol down right in front of her and going, like, you can do this right now if you want to. And I think that the future, the best way for this to progress in the future would probably be to have her either be put in that situation again, and then more quickly make the right decision rather than mull it over or be distracted long enough to get, you know, slashed in the gut. Or the way I'd prefer to see it is for her to eventually just get to have that one-on-one throwdown, or be the one to take down the one who killed the given partner, and then make the choice of, am I gonna beat them in the fight and kill them, or am I gonna beat them in the fight and then, you know, leave them to the proper authorities, whoever they may be at this point, if they even still exist. I don't know. It was really cool, because it was nice for just to have that emotional moment thrown right in your face, kind of as a viewer. But any other thoughts on RC? Any other points anyone wants to bring up? Because I can't remember what else happened in the episode.
I've got one.
All right, let's do it.
It seems like Prime has gone back to his every other line must be something that could be on an inspirational poster.
He was very quotable in this episode. It wasn't nearly as heavy as the five-parter, but
he had whatever redemption is a right that all sentient beings should be allowed to have, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He had a line about at the end where, what was it? Wisdom has to be earned. It can't be given, or something or other.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember, was it him or Ratchet that had the physical wounds heal easily, but
Oh, that was
emotional.
That was
awesome. Wounding.
That was Prime.
Yeah,
that was Prime. And then in the beginning, I think his first couple of lines almost sounded like they could have been clipped out of anything else. I'm trying to remember. I just remember that fact. I don't remember what they were specifically, but they were very like stock Prime quotes.
Well, for this specific episode and plotline, this is another one where the spoiler that Hasbro let loose is really affecting my view on Optimus Prime. And because of the very nature of this episode and the nature of what Prime was saying, I was okay with it because I also heard the spoiler.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you've heard it, you know what I'm talking about. It's something where I got to see a future episode where when that spoiler finally stops being a spoiler. That's when I'm going to be able to make a real big judgment call on some of those lines, because it's putting this whole different perspective on that Optimus for me, which I'm enjoying.
Well, we want to talk about the spoiler at the end, or is it something that you really don't want to drop at all on the show?
I would really like to avoid dropping it myself.
Okay,
it's such a huge one. I was going to say I was at first extremely disappointed that they even let that out this early, but. It is helping me get a better appreciation for Optimus Prime's line delivery.
So, I'll say this. I don't know what spoiler you're talking about, so...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to know it.
You can have a first moment reaction out of Aaron, like, oh my god! If you want.
Well, no, I don't want to drop it on here, because I mean...
All right.
It's something, I'm sure it's becoming the next... You all know the movie spoiler I'm talking about if you saw the movie. I have a feeling it's becoming the next one of those where people are feeling like, well, since one source said it, technically the spoiler embargo is over. And like to me, the spoiler embargo isn't over until the episode's aired. So I don't know. I don't want to go too deeply into it. But I cannot help but reference it because of the way that it colored my perception of some of the stuff that happened in these last two episodes. With luck, this spoiler will drop like next week. But we won't know till then. I don't know. Anyone else have any points from partners they'd like to bring up? Or are we...
There's a...
Oh!
There's a...
Omegas, go! Yeah.
So you're meaning to tell me that the alien ship that has been on Earth for eons has been sitting out in the open?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody's walked down that valley underneath that stone arch.
There's an arch!
Yeah.
There's an arch!
Yeah.
Everything crashes on Earth, by the way. I mean, assuming that was shot down over
that,
Earth.
That was the point that I was going to bring up in the last episode about them ending up in the cave at the same time is, well, everything ends up on Earth anyway, so what's to say that that cave doesn't have whatever the mystical Transformer gathering force is?
Transformagtosium?
Yeah.
No, transform magneticism. I don't know. But yeah, it was another one. I think it's just, at this point, I'm starting to really glaze over it whenever they're like, oh, I remember when this blew up back in the war. And I'm just kind of going like, I'm assuming they're talking about that war on Earth that Fowler has referenced in brief. Like, whatever happened 5 years before the series began.
Right.
Has to be
This one. This one they specifically mentioned was shot down over Earth.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so.
Well, did they say over Earth or shot down?
Well, they said no. Shot down and literally shot in half.
Yeah.
I assume it was over Earth because they didn't go very far.
Well, because in...
Well, especially if the ship
Dark
got
of
shot
the moon,
in half.
The Ark got shot in Cybertron orbit and ended up all the way to Earth.
In this
I can
case,
say
though,
that, but it's in the first 2 minutes of the movie and not worry about it being a spoiler.
Well, yeah, but this was a ship that got shot in half. And so for both halves to both end up... within more or less walking distance of each other would have pushed it pretty hard. I mean, it's my one of my favorite jokes about some Transformers media right now, but I want to say it was shot down over Earth because it has to have been.
Well, it had a MacGuffin in it. Of course it was drawn to Earth.
That's right. They're like, where should we take the Friezo stick? Earth?
Yeah, this was a throwback to a G1 MacGuffin, so it had to hit Earth.
You know what would be awesome, though, is if when they eventually do their flashback episode showing the war that took place that you know, became, that got Earth involved with the Transformers in the first place, I'd love it if, like, Earth was almost practically under hidden Decepticon control, and that's why they kept moving all their stuff there, because they were basically in charge of the planet without anyone knowing about it. before, you know, Optimus Prime showed up. Like, that to me would be one of the best reveals, because it would be like, you guys totally just plot covered why everything crashes on Earth. But, you know, if they don't cover that, I'm not going to be mad. I doubt they'd think that deeply on it. But, yeah, and when ships get shot in half, the corridors get stuffed with rocks as well.
Yeah. Like
I kind of, and I admit maybe it's because I had stepped away from the TV for about 5 seconds to get a drink from another room, but I kind of missed whether those ships were underground or, I mean, clearly one of them wasn't.
The first ship part was.
Okay.
And because she had to drill down to it and then drilled back up. Back up again. Without drilling back to anyway, and then the second one was the through the arch to the
big
to
open
the one
valley.
That was fully exposed. Yeah, yeah.
With daylight hitting the ship,
we can find the one that's underground, but the one that's fully exposed.
And again, fully exposed ship in a big valley, you know, and the humans don't know about the Transformers except for Fowler and some government types. I'm kind of like, oh man. Thank goodness that valley is apparently inaccessible by humans, because mech would have a field day if they stumbled across half a Transformer spaceship.
Yeah.
I actually had one last little bit I could bring up that is kind of going with my ongoing faction counter. So we had Autobots, Decepticons, and mech. For a while we had Arachnid on her own, but now she's kind of a Decepticon, but now we got Starscream on his own. So the question is Starscream going to remain on his own, or will he end up, for some reason, working with Mech, be it against his will or being?
I don't think he'd get in with Mech.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, given that he's currently the odd duck out, if you will, and they keep talking about Project Chimera, I wonder if Starscream and Project Chimera will be clashing at some point as a pair of plot points. But
he's going to start cloning himself.
That's right, on the moon.
Different color schemes, different
He's going to find little bits of dark energon.
Yeah.
that's how he'll get his seekers back, because it was this episode that they dropped that
there was a couple of references there. Yeah, there was that. World there was a reference to the Fallen.
Yeah,
Fallen is in Prime canon.
Yeah, well, I mean, they said that Prime is going to... At Comic-Con, didn't they mention that Prime might have some, like, I saw someone tweeting about Prime and one of the 13 or something like that. I didn't quite get all that straight.
Yeah, well, it's the end, so I think we can talk about that stuff now. There might be spoilers for big stuff from this point on.
They released
the trailer or the teaser video online. I think it was on IGN, and it's been on other sites since then, I think. But kind of really implies that Unicron is coming soon for season 2.
So stakes in Prime might get big.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, we kind of knew that at least he was gonna make an appearance somehow because of the whole, like, before the show even started on a Hub special, they showed Colin and Welker in the voice booth doing lines talking about Unicron growing stronger.
Yeah.
So for anyone who had seen that, you know that Unicron was going to pop up at least once or here and there, but unless that was a giant disinformation campaign.
Huge red
herring. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I doubt the Fallen was anything more than just a reference, and who knows, in this world, he may just be like a boogeyman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even if this is Autobots, in the continuity that they talk about, where Megatronus or whatever is the Fallen, it's so far back in history that it has just become that.
It's the in fiction mythology. Yeah. It's how I always look at it.
Yeah. But I did hear something about that about I think it was Artoni who was tweeting from SDCC.
Yeah,
saying that one of the they confirmed that one of the 13 was going to make an appearance in Prime, and outside of that, I don't know. I didn't follow it up because I wasn't searching for huge spoiler threads.
Given the way that Prime carries itself with stuff like the 13 or Unicron appearing in it potentially, I think it could be done pretty well, because Prime carries itself with the ability to go to such a dark tone that stuff could have a nice level of epicness to it. And I don't mean that in the internet terminology epicness. I mean that in the actual word epic and its dictionary meaning. Odd that I feel I need to specify that nowadays. But I'm otherwise, I think, kind of tapped out on my own discussionary points.
I'll say one more thing. Unless somebody brought it up and I forgot. But Bumblebee actually saved the day. We got to see Bumblebee do something.
Oh, holy crap.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
I was waiting for a lag.
Yeah, when I saw him moving in the back, I thought for a second that I was just really tired. Because they didn't focus on him moving. They kept him in the background, the utter background, while Arachnid was in massive close-up. And I loved that. I loved that effect, because I was like, wait, did Bumblebee just move? No, he did. Oh, Arachnid's going to get punched in the face. And she totally got punched in the face. That was a really cool moment. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, because there was just a quick moment there where you go, why the hell is Bumblebee shooting the cliffside? Like, yeah. Ooh, smoke. Smart.
And that was really cool. And so, you know, Bumblebee, I'm really warming up to him.
Yep. See you in 5 episodes, Bumblebee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see you.
Why don't you bring Raph next time?
Yeah, we'll see you in the Raph character growth episode, right, Bumblebee? Right? Seeing how we're this far in the show.
Yeah. My predictions, Bumblebee will be in the season finale.
Yep. I do not disagree. I think who are we still waiting for to have a real meaningful growth episode? What, Raph and Soundwave?
Prime.
Optimus Prime.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Him too.
The title character.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we know, I know that he's, I'm not going to say anything else, but,
yeah.
And do you think Bumblebee has, because Bumblebee had some moments in,
okay, I keep hearing a rumor, and I don't know where it came from, so I'll ask you, but supposedly everybody keeps talking about that there's supposed to be an episode where we learn how Bumblebee lost his voice.
That's not the one I'm talking about, no.
No, I'm not talking about the one you're talking about, but I'm saying, yeah. Has anybody else heard that, or is that just something that's floating around?
I think they mentioned they were building up to that for season 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Bumblebee, it sounds like Bumblebee's going to get his moment. So, really, the only ones that are still in limbo would be Raph and Soundwave, as far as having a real big character build.
Yeah.
And I Soundwave, I'm okay with him not having it yet, because he seems like a character where you've got to make that matter to the point where that is almost season finale material.
But yeah, they have to make it matter.
Ago, they could have built off of it a little bit more because they actually had him, and what's he been in the last 5 episodes, a face that Starscream talks to for a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, Soundwave hasn't done anything since the whole Megatron on the verge of getting euthanized arc.
Yeah.
Since then, Soundwave has done almost nothing, and there were episodes before that where he has done nothing, and they're gonna really have to make it count, because at this point, I'd say that is the one huge failing of this show, and not something of like, oh, that could have turned out better. I mean, literally failing in that they've created this awesome character, and he gets almost no screen time outside of occasional frames in an episode that something needs to give.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I do miss his, like, I miss his creepy moments, too, because I love his creepy moments, but I do wish they were happening more often. I should have specified, in terms of having a big growth moment for him, I'm okay with them waiting this long, but I do agree, he needs to be on screen as a presence more often. And Raph also really needs... I mean, he's one of the kid characters. He needs the episode where he really gets that extra layer put on him like everyone else already has had. Because, I mean, you can argue perhaps in Out of His Head or whatever, like, you know, maybe he had that moment with Bumblebee where he talked for a little bit, but that was a character fleshing... That was like a backstory fleshing out moment for about a half paragraph of backstory. That's not enough. Raph and Soundwave both are still in need of their big episodes, because and Optimus Prime needs it as well, but I'm really sure he'll have it. So the ones who are unconfirmedly still needing that kind of growth, I think, are those other two. Come on, Raph. Hack your episode to happen already.
I have another point.
Oh!
For RC Watch, still black.
Thanks. I was actually wondering about that, and I'm really glad you brought it up. In this episode, actually, this is the one, though, isn't this the one that had the close-up that revealed just how reflective that surface is?
Yeah, it looks like it's more reflective, or one thing I wondered if maybe it is transparent and showing the black underneath, because it looks like, you know, were it to be like the chest armor underneath the two raw panels maybe is black, and then perhaps that's clear and you're seeing through it.
You know what we need?
There are a couple angles.
Not
where I
sure
wasn't quite
if
sure.
Serious.
We need some more montages and collages. Yeah. So be sure to post them in the thread. We need them from different angles. We need every single frame of RC from the entire show.
You guys are bad people, and you should feel bad.
I'm surprised you didn't mention that we're bad people and should. Yeah, I don't know. Anyone else have any points they want to bring up about partners or rock bottom? Or are we feeling good?
Why was the episode about avenging Cliffjumper not named Rock Bottom?
I admit, I was kind of bummed that Rock Bottom had no Cliffjumper in it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't mention that there was no opportunity taken to show another flashback Cliffjumper scene in this. I don't know. I can never think of these.
Speaking of Rock Bottom.
Yeah. I can never think of these things on the fly. I don't know
how
about
the weird transformation lock bind for Starscream?
Oh, that was
kind of
odd.
Not just as he handcuffed, but he's also wing cuffed.
I mean, I like that there was a logic to it, because it was like, technically he's a flying dude, so handcuffing him wouldn't do much.
Yeah.
If they had stasis cuffs, they wouldn't have had this problem with him gutting RC.
Yeah, guess what thought ahead? Animated? Just saying.
Yeah.
And guess,
it does make me wonder, with so many different vehicle modes Transformers are capable of, how many different types of cuffs they have to keep around at all times.
I was going to say, just going off the stasis cuff thing, I think we've seen many of these already, but hey, guess what we should add to the list of third-party accessories to make?
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Starscream handcuffs and wing cuffs.
Well, I wonder if Starscream's wings in toy mode can fold all the way back flat to do that, or would that have to be a swap-out piece?
I want to say that it looked like the deluxe ones could, I'll ask PL on the weekend. We can just pester him.
Considering that they are straight out in vehicle mode and angled in robot mode, I assume they can fold.
Well, so yeah, but can they fold all the way back? See, that's the thing. You don't know.
I guess. Maybe. If only there was some chance I might have to take a look at a toy in person from Transformers Prime.
That would be excellent.
I wonder if that'll ever happen. Sigh. So thank you all for listening to our double episode of WTF Primetime. This has been Vangelis, that's been GogDog, Aaron, and Omegas. Do we have a new episode this weekend?
I hope not.
I can tell you real quick.
All right. By the way, me and Aaron will be at TFCon. So if Hasbro Canada do the thing they usually do, if they bring Transformers Prime toys, often when they bring toys, they have loose ones sitting out on the table in front of them.
Yeah.
So it'd be really great if they had Transformers Prime toys this year, because then they'd be on a table.
Please, guys. Hey, come on.
That's what I'm saying.
All right, hold on a second. I have to go to source number two.
Oh, dear.
Come on.
Oh, my.
Well, sing. Somebody sing. Aaron, sing.
I don't sing.
I was walking down the street when I saw a lamppost flying through the air, and I said, is that a magnetic tornado? Yes, it was. It came from space. And a guy who looks like John Delancey was talking about it in the computer room. Need more?
Nope. Right. Do.
Oh, now you're starting to sing.
Nope. This week is Shadow Zone rerun.
Oh, so.
Okay.
So we get a nice weekend of not having to worry about prime time, so we can instead record.
So
like
we get a podcasts. We get a break during BotCon. We get a break during BFCon.
They know.
It's a strategic.
They know. All right. Well. Hopefully there'll be some neat Prime stuff to talk about out of TFCon in terms of the toys, but either way, that's prime time for now. So thank you all for tuning in. And unless there's anything else to say, we are Prime out!
So Bulkhead's green bits were still green, by the way.
Ah! Ah!
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.